Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Wow, winning.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
And today we are both in the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis. Hello, I am Paul Harrah's, and sitting next to me is my partner Dennis Phillips, in from Las Vegas, in from all over the place, actually, with all the traveling he's doing, and literally in from a tournament that he's actually playing in right now.
You did have to mention that, didn't you?
It is one of the tournaments of the Gateway Poker Classic, which began last Thursday here in town, and Dennis flew in like 3 hours ago, came over here to Harrah's, and he knew we had a show to do today, but figured, I can't resist, and you had to play, right?
I had several people here, and they said, well, you're going to play, aren't you? You're going to play. I got a show to do. I can't play. You're going to play, aren't you? You're going to play, aren't you? You know, okay, I play. What the heck? We'll see what happens.
$245 buy-in.
Correct.
And you start with 10,000 in chips.
Correct.
You got into the tournament late.
Yes.
And 3 hours into it, you're the chip leader.
I don't know about the chip leader, but I'm right up there. Yeah, I've tripled up already. So
now the last time you took substantial time away from a poker tournament, it was because your appendix was exploding.
Yeah, my spleen is fine. All my internal organs are okay.
No complaints from the pancreas?
No. Everything is fine.
Good.
I don't expect that to happen.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
No, there's a lot of people that I used to play with all the time. They're over there, all the tournaments. I've run into a dozen people that I haven't seen for a while, so it's kind of cool. Win, lose, or draw over there, it's going to be some fun. And get to talk to some people I haven't seen for quite a while.
Yeah. This is where Dennis got his start before heading off to be part of the first November 9 in 2008 at the World Series of Poker. Well, that wasn't the plan, but it turned out that he did and finished third that year. He was a mainstay in the tournaments here at Harrah's St. Louis for a couple of years, making the Tournament of Champions month in and month out. And there are guys who are in that tournament today who
yep.
I see who were there at those tables with you in those days, and they're still playing in all these tournaments today.
They absolutely are, and they're still doing well. They're still dangerous players.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. In fact, I was pleasantly surprised. I'm playing with a gentleman there that I used to play with quite a bit. He was a good player then. He's improved.
Yeah.
So I'm glad he's short stacked.
Well, so far in the first few days of the Gateway Poker Classic, $240,000 has been won in
Sweet.
The prize pool. 1,400 different participants have been involved in it. We've had all sorts of things. It started on Thursday night with the Jack and Jill tournament, which was that unique structure that I mentioned on last week's show. Had to be a man and a woman making up a team, each of whom bought in for $125. And then, rather than starting it with all women in the first round or all men in the first round, they did it so that if your team got a seat that was the odd-numbered seat at your table, the woman sat there. If it was an even-numbered seat, the man sat there. So it was
cool.
Mixed gender at the table from the beginning.
Okay.
63 different teams. Bought
Very
into
good.
This thing, which I think is a
I think that's excellent for a unique type structure.
For the first time
yeah.
ever. It was a fast structure. You only started with 3,000 in chips for the entire team, 2,000 for whoever started first, and then 1,000 for the other player who came in on level two, half-hour levels, and then you would alternate levels back and forth. And I ran into both men and women who were really excited about playing, and their partner was in the first round. They didn't know what to do.
Oh.
Because the tournament officials told them, you can't stay here. This is not standing at the table as a team working on strategy of each hand. You must leave.
Sign language prohibited.
Exactly. So some of them actually came in and sat down in some of the cash games here, played for 25 minutes, then went back in, and their partner came and took their seat in the cash game. I saw that happening a couple of times. And like I said, it was a fast structure, and I think it worked because a lot of the people who took part in this brought their significant other, who may not necessarily be a hardcore poker player, and maybe agreed to come out and play and didn't want to spend all night long. The thing started at 7 o'clock. They didn't want to have to be here till 1, 2, 3 in the morning.
Right.
So if they came and played 3, 4, 5 hours of poker, that was fine for them. And there were a lot of smiles with a lot of people in that Jack and Jill tournament.
Well, good. I like the idea of it. I was hoping it would be successful. I think it'll be picked up by some others. Like I said, we've seen so many unique things. We talked about the position poker last week.
Yeah.
Stars has got one that's a little different from the position that they're doing down in the Bahamas this year. It's win the button. And literally, if you have somebody at your table that wins three hands in a row and you're sitting to his left, you're going to be a blind three hands in a row.
So every time you win a hand, you get the button. Not, you don't have to win three in a row.
No.
Every time you win the hand,
you are the button for the next hand.
Oh, in a tournament, that's going to kill the people who are in the blinds over and over again.
If you have that aggressive guy that's winning a lot of small pots on your right, you're in trouble.
But if you got him on the left, you're going to be the cutoff pretty often.
That's true.
I mean, that's the benefit of it.
Absolutely.
You're actually going to profit from him doing that.
Absolutely.
Of course, he's going to be on your left, and you're probably not going to be able to do a lot. But at least you get something out of that, a little collateral win for you.
They're calling it the win the button, WTB, win the button. I think it sounds cool.
Yeah.
So,
right.
All sorts of little twists.
Absolutely. So Friday here at the Gateway Poker Classic, I played in the noon event, which was a $355 buy-in, 10,000 in chips, 40-minute levels. I like to play that kind of deep stack poker because as a cash game player, I'm used to playing with more than 40 big blinds.
Right.
So a tournament like that was right up my alley, and I did pretty well and made it through first several levels and had chipped up considerably. After about 4 hours, I had quadrupled my stack. And
okay.
I was doing pretty well. Went to the dinner break, came back from the dinner break, took a hit on one hand, had to make a monster lay down, which I'm 100% sure was right.
Okay.
I don't want to go into all the details of it. And then ended up going out on a bad beat. And I don't normally tell bad beat stories, but I'm going to tell this one only because I think this is a classic example of the kind of hand that you can't do anything about. And I don't know about you, but if I'm playing, whether it's cash or a tournament, and I lose a lot of chips because of something I did wrong, that night, when I go to sleep, I'm replaying that hand in my head over and over and over again, trying to say, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? Didn't you see when he did that? Maybe there was a tell that I saw but I didn't believe, or a strategy thing I did, or misread somebody completely. I don't think that applied in this hand. I'll tell you what it was. I was in late position and opened with a pair of jacks for about 2.1x, double the big, little more than double the big blind. It came around to the guy who was in the on the button, and he looked like he wanted to raise, but then decided to just call. And at that point, the blinds were big enough that if he hit three bet me, I would four bet shove with my jacks.
Right.
And if he's got a bigger pair, he's got a bigger pair. I mean, we're 8-9 hours into the tournament at that point, and that's the way the table was playing. But he doesn't. He just calls. And the flop comes queen-queen-jack. So I flop the under full.
You have happy feet.
Yes. And normally when I smash a flop like that, I'm going to bet out.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also thinking to myself, what hand could he have pre-flop that he was thinking about raising but decided not to? Doesn't have aces.
No.
Doesn't have kings.
No.
Probably doesn't have ace-king. Please have ace-queen. So I check.
Okay.
Sure enough, he bets.
Right.
I think about raising, but instead I just flat. Yep. I just call. The turn is a three, and the board is all rainbow now. I check again. He bets again, I think, for a couple of seconds, and I'm all in.
Absolutely.
And he thinks for a couple of nanoseconds, and snap calls me.
Okay.
He has ace-queen.
Yep.
I have pocket jacks.
There you go.
The river is a three. He makes queens full of threes.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah.
Now, again, I don't mention it for the bad beat thing, but because, it's one of those hands that when you replay it in your mind, you realize there's nothing that either of us could have done that would have changed the outcome of this hand. If I raise with jacks and he decides to three-bet me with ace-queen, all the chips are going in, same result.
Right.
If he just did what he did and calls, and I lead out on the flop with my jacks full of queens, he's coming over the top.
Yep. And then he's going to be pot committed. Besides, he's got top pair top set, kicker.
Top kicker.
Yeah, he's not going
anywhere. He's willing to get all the chips
in.
So it doesn't matter at any point. I mean, if I don't put all the money in on the turn, here's the only way the money doesn't go in. Not all the money goes on the turn. I don't raise him on the turn, and then the board pairs on the river. maybe I can get away with it, but I don't have enough chips at that point.
I don't think you do.
To do anything.
I think you call even there. You may cry call. You may not like it, but I think your chips are going to go in on the river if he pushed it out there.
In any of those scenarios, I don't see any way where the chips don't go in on the turn the way they did.
No, they're in there.
So anyway, I got knocked out of that in 34th place, and it paid 18, and so I ended up out of the money. I would have been chip leader if I'd won that hand.
Yeah.
You know, it happens. By the way, Tim McKernan, who does the morning show on KFNS, our flagship station here in St. Louis, was also in that tournament, and I know he's in this tournament with you today. In our tournament, I would tweet on the breaks what my chip count was, and at one point he tweeted back to me, if they move me to your table, I'm going to move in on you on every hand. We come back from a break, and he's been moved to my table. And on about the second or third hand, I raise in middle position. It comes around to him. He looks at his cards and mucks in the big blind. And I said, hey, Mr. Big Shot Tweeter, I told you to bring it on, and you didn't bring it on. He ended up getting knocked out before I did. Here's the other thing about that tournament. The field was 164.
Okay.
Played all through Friday, into Friday night, and I was gone by the time they got down to three. They played down to three. It was a two-day tournament, so they were planning on coming back the next day. But why play down to three rather than stopping at nine, which would be your final table? Now all nine of you get to come back tomorrow, or with only three players left, you know, whatever time they stopped, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, let's just play this out.
The only scenario I could see where that might happen is if the tournament director gave them a choice. And when they go down to nine-handed, they said, do you want to continue playing or end? We'll end it right here. They played down, and then for whatever reason, when they got down to the three players, they said, oh, we're done for the night. Maybe if he left it up to the players, they would do it. I can't believe a tournament director would make that arbitrary decision.
Well, they had been announcing all day long, we're going to play 18 levels today, which would take you to whatever it is, 1:30.
Okay.
But still... And you know, maybe when you get down to three players, it's 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, now you got a personnel issue. You know, you probably were running two different shifts of dealers and supervisors and whatever it is, and now you're going to have people on overtime. I don't know how that works. So next time we talk to Jimmy Sommerfeld, whose crew is running this,
we
can ask him about that.
There is another scenario, too. Missouri gaming is about as strict a gaming regulations as any in the country.
Yeah.
And it's very possible that they wrote in there 18 levels, and if you played one hand beyond 18 levels, Missouri gaming would visit you the next day.
And so you couldn't play less than 18 and stop at nine players?
You couldn't. It's possible. I don't know. I'm just totally guessing on that. But knowing Missouri gaming and some of the unique regulations that they impose.
Oh, you're being so nice.
I am really biting my tongue here.
I know.
That could be a possibility.
I hadn't considered that, but you're absolutely right. The rest of the Gateway Poker Classic continues to play out. The 7 o'clock tournament's very popular. 200 people in those Friday and Saturday night.
Good.
And by the way, if you work during the day and you want to come play in poker tournaments, they're doing the $125 no-limit hold'em tournaments every night at 7 o'clock through this weekend. So we're getting a couple hundred people in those fields almost every night.
When I was sitting at the table, I heard comments about it. They said it's a great tournament.
Yeah.
It's a one-day one. You could get a very reasonable buy-in. They're having 200 people at these.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a great tournament to come out to.
Yeah. Not as popular the Omaha events, which is a little odd because we have so many Pot Limit Omaha and Pot Limit Omaha high-low cash games here in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. But those tournaments are only drawing 40, 50 players.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the first time around for an event like this, it's not a circuit event. We have those in April here at Harris St. Louis. But I think so far everything's going well. The main event will be this Saturday, and that's an $1,100 buy-in. I will be playing in that. You won't be because, well, we'll talk about what you're going to be doing later.
Okay.
But anyway, if you want information on the Harris St. Louis Gateway Poker Classic, you can go to harrisstlouis.com. Or go to our website, thechipleader.com, click on the show blog, and in addition to all of the audio from all of our shows, you know, we have links to it as well. So that's what's going on here in St. Louis. You spent your weekend at another poker tournament.
I did.
In Reno, Nevada.
I did. We went up there to the Peppermill.
Which is becoming like your home away from home in Nevada.
Well, it's a gorgeous place. They spent over $1 million in the poker room. It's got a spa there. It's a world-class spa. The rooms are great suites. There's a half a dozen restaurants in there that we managed to visit every one of them. The room itself has a ton of action. It's head and shoulders above the other casinos that are there in Reno. When I played there Friday night in some cash, there was a 5-10 table going, there was a 10-25 going, there was a 30-60 limit going. Jennifer Harmon was sitting at one of the tables, several other people, Bling Bling and a couple other guys were there playing. Really good play.
Did you sit down at some of the cash?
I sat down at the 5-10. I was on the waiting list for the 10-25, and after I was at the 5-10 for 10 minutes, I didn't want to leave the 5-10. So when a seat came open, I passed on it over there. Why do I want to go over there against Bling Bling and Jennifer Harmon and some of these other guys when I'm very comfortable at my table?
Uh-huh.
It was a very, very, very nice night. But they have this almost every weekend now. They're getting a lot of action. They're getting a lot of people from Northern California coming over there because of the action. It's the winter time where the skiing's going on. It's, like I said, you can take your family there with a spa and everything. Mike Ganey, the gentleman who runs it with Kathy Woods, is doing a great job, really takes care of the players. I will be back.
Cool.
They had a Heartland Poker Tournament there, was why I was up there, and yep. We did play that on Saturday and Sunday. There was, and Jamie Gold had his seminar, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. But okay. Jamie was there, and Jerry Yang was there, and Kathy Liebert was there, and Chad Brown was there, and I was there, and Chad made it to the bubble, and none of the rest of us did.
Oh.
We all got knocked out.
Uh-huh.
The Heartland Poker Tour is a little aggressive in the early levels. I think when they said when they got down to about 20 players, the average chip count was 12 big blinds.
Oh.
So, yeah, it makes it a really tough tournament when you get down there toward the end. If you lose one hand, you're short stacked.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it.
See, like I was saying before, I don't like those kind of tournaments because I'm a deep stack guy.
Yeah.
And I don't even know the right strategy in many cases for those sort of things. When to be aggressive, when not to be aggressive, when to let the early part of the field go out, try to collect some chips here and there, when to steal. It's very different in short
stack
tournaments.
Very, very different. Yeah, it's a huge different philosophy on this. It's a little riskier. It's like it's sort of the difference between playing a full ring and playing heads up. I mean, there's a monstrous difference in how you play the game there. But it was a fun time and everything. I arrived up at Reno, and I went up there to Jamie's seminar and caught the last hour and a half of it or so. And actually, Jamie did a very, very good job. He would say in that don't play the way I play. You play the way you're comfortable playing. I will give you the basics for it. I will answer all your questions. You have to decide how you want to play it, though. And he's absolutely right. Everybody's play is different. You need to play what you're comfortable with. You just need to be aware of the other styles of play. You need to be aware of what your odds are. You need to be aware of all the basic things from a continuation play to a chop play to a whatever down the line here. And he answered all of the questions. And then the last half hour, he involved me in it, and I was answering some of the questions. We're going back and forth. So I was pleasantly surprised by his seminar a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Very well prepared, and he gave them basic strategy right down the line and answers their questions that way.
Nice.
Yeah, it was. It was very nice. So
that was last weekend. Now
correct.
You're here for like 48 hours in St. Louis.
I'm in and out.
And then you're heading south from here to the Choctaw Casino in Oklahoma, and I see on the Card Player website that you have been asked to not just go down there and be a part of the first event in the North American Casino Poker Tour, but to actually do the commentary for the streaming video.
Yeah, they want me to do that. I'm hoping I can't. I'm hoping that I'm at the final table.
Uh-huh.
But if that doesn't happen, I'll be there. I think Robert Williamson is going to be there with me, maybe a couple of other people. And we're going to sit there and do a little hand analysis. We're going to do a little streaming about the different plays and that. It should be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy it. A gentleman by the name of Kenny Lambert moved in there in August and has taken over that poker room.
Kenny used to run the Beau Rivage in Biloxi and the Gold Strike in Tunica.
Correct. And he's very experienced and really knows how to put on a good tournament, and we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to it. Unfortunately, I had obligated myself to that prior to the Gateway being set up here in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
So I had no choice in the matter. I have to go down there.
Yeah.
But it should be fun.
All right. Speaking of streaming things, last night ESPN2 showed the two-hour edited version of the November 9 finale, which, of course, we talked about when it happened on the first weekend of November, and which aired live. The Sunday part of it aired on live on ESPN2, and then the Tuesday night three-way finale with Ben Lamb and Martin Stashko and Pius Hines That aired live on ESPN. And we talked about what a game changer that was. I recorded the thing on ESPN2 last night, the edited version, which Lon McCarron talked about with us on the show a couple of weeks ago. First of all, I got to say, Lon is so good at pretending he's never seen this before because he was there doing play-by-play when the event actually happened, and now he has to go back in the studio and say, well, look at this. Look at what he has. What does he need? Look at his outs. And Norman Chad's there with him. You know, they both saw every hand. And yet they're acting surprised. Ben Lamb moves all in with King Jack. Martin Stasko calls with Sif. You know, I mean, they're both very good at that. But that dynamic that we talked about changing because of the live streaming, I was so bored last night. I fast-forwarded through it. Of course, I know what all the hands are and how they're going to play out because I watched it and I had to analyze it so that we could talk about it. And so I know that I'm 1,000 times more into it than the casual fan might be when they came across it.
That's just it. The two things. The casual fan that didn't watch the streaming, that's not that into poker, can still probably see it, and it's the same it has been the last few years. You and I, absolutely. We've already seen. I was on stage the entire time. I mean, I had a pretty good view of what was going on there.
Right.
So a huge, huge difference. Actually, the two-hour one probably doesn't even interest me, except for I'm going to be curious to see what hands they eliminated, because that's always so difficult when you try to do that. You start out, you've got nine players. You're going to show eight hands, the eight hands that they got eliminated,
knockout
hands. So that's there already.
Yep.
In that 2 hours, what can they show in hands? 40 hands, 30 hands, I don't know, like that.
You see a big the big hand between Owen O'D that got him crippled when he got involved with P.S. Hines.
Okay.
When Hines had queens and O'D had ace-queen, that's in there. There are a couple of other hands like that where you see players trying to make a maneuver or somebody three bets light but takes down the pot because somebody lays down ace-jack or whatever
right.
it is. There are a few of those. When it gets to the heads-up action between Stasko and Hines, you get to see maybe about a half a dozen hands, maybe seven. I didn't count them.
They played 6 hours heads up.
Well, you remember your year after you got knocked out, Eastgate and Demidoff, we saw two hands TV, and that took several hours to play out as well.
The whole thing, and that's a good example, because when that started heads up, Peter had a significant chip lead. It actually shifted, and for a while, Ivan had the chip lead, and then it went back to Peter. The two hands they showed, I mean, none of that whole interaction ever was shown. Nobody had a clue that they played 60 hands together or whatever.
That's the problem with edited poker. You
Absolutely.
Don't get context.
Yes.
And the live streams do give you that.
And everybody thinks that everybody gets very, very lucky.
Right.
Because they always show the suck-out hands.
It's because, you know, it's an all-in. Oh, we hit the flush on the river.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, well, you didn't see the hand earlier where this happened. And
that set
up. And why did he make that call? Okay, from earlier. Just to mention one thing about Stasko and Hines, we told you during the November 9 that P.S. Hines had been signed by Poker Stars. Last week, Stars announced that they have also signed Martin Stasko. Why did they wait until after the November 9 to get him? He's only the second Czech player in the world to have any kind of sponsorship deal. You would think in a country like that they want to have some sort of impact, but why wait until afterwards?
Again, I really don't know. It could have been that he was weighing his options. It could have been that they couldn't come to an agreement. It could have been that that was actually being reviewed by attorneys, and it was actually a done deal ahead of time.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what it was, but I'm just glad that they've got him signed. He seems like a really nice guy, and hopefully he'll hang around the poker scene for a while.
Yeah, I hope so, too. By the way, do you know how much P.S. Hines paid in taxes on his $8.7 million in winnings?
Oh,
I know
this was a sore subject
for you when you got your $4.5 million.
How much
you had to write a check for to the government. How much of $8.7 million do you think he has to write to both the U.S. and German governments?
I haven't got a clue.
Well, you remember Peter Eastgate?
What,
72% or something like that?
It was in the low 70s. He ended up negotiating. Nobody knows what he ended up paying.
Yeah.
Because he tried to move to London and all this other stuff.
Okay.
But
whatever number you guess for P.S. Hines, I'm taking the under. Because the correct answer is zero. Under the U.S.-Germany tax treaty, gambling income earned in the U.S. is exempt from U.S. taxation for German residents, citizens. Without a tax treaty, he would lose 30% of his winnings to the IRS. And in Germany, that part of the equation, they consider gambling to be a use of after-tax earned money. So for gamblers, your winnings are tax-free.
Okay, what's it cost to move to Berlin?
No, well, not only would you save money on your taxes there, but you could play online.
There you go.
Which is what we're going to talk about when we come back here in just a moment. Not that Dennis is moving, but we've got a whole bunch of stories about what's up with online poker and more as we continue with the second half of the Final Table Poker Radio Show. Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris were both live in the middle of the Gateway Poker Classic, literally, in the poker room of Harris St. Louis. Our live broadcasts are every Tuesday at 3 on 590 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. You can also catch up with all 149 of our podcasts on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com, or via iTunes.
Kids, are you caught up in that old game of shuffling your debt around and hoping you'll get lucky and win the jackpot? Well, it's time to deal. Mortgage rates are low and savings are high. So stop bluffing and call 800-GRANNY-8 or go to granny8.com. You bet our friendly loan officers make it easy, and we don't have an application fee. So call 800-GRANNY-8, and you'll be holding all the aces.
Great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8.
Granny8.com.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, live from the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis, where the Bad Beat jackpot is $126,000. The cash games are going on, and the Gateway Poker Classic is approaching its midway point. It started last Thursday, and it'll roll through this weekend. Three tournaments a day at noon, 5, and 7 o'clock. Various buy-ins, various games. The horse event, the high-low limit Omaha event, I think that one's at 5 o'clock today. Every evening, there's a $125 no-limit hold'em event at 7 o'clock. And the main event, which will be an $1,100 buy-in, will happen on this Saturday, December 10th. You can get details by going to harrahsstlewis.com or get the full schedule via the link we have on thechipleader.com on the Final Table Poker Show blog that is there. A couple of quick things to mention here. If you were a fan of high-stakes poker on GSN for the last 6 years and you were hoping it would come back next year, we told you it was unlikely because it was sponsored by PokerStars last year, and in this post-Black Friday environment, it's hard for anybody to get any kind of commercial sponsorship for poker programming other than the WSOP. That's why Poker After Dark has gone away. That's why the big game went away. Well, now looks like high-stakes poker is going away. GSN has been airing reruns since the original run of those shows in the first quarter of this year. Those reruns will end after December 31st.
Yeah.
Even the late-night airings will be gone. They have sponsor problems, and I just saw today the ratings were down considerably last season, and I think some of that has to do with the fact that the network forced Maury to replace Gabe Kaplan with Norm MacDonald. It just was not the same show.
It wasn't. I mean, Gabe knew so much about it and was such a likable guy. I mean, he had credentials that Norm will never have. So,
and we talked earlier about how live streaming tournament poker is the new thing. I think it was different for cash game action because in a cash game you don't have those all in, oh, we caught the queen kind of situations.
True.
You saw real strategy. I mean, you played on it.
Oh, heck yeah.
And we got to see a lot of different action, a lot of different hands, and, of course, people getting run down by Tom Dwan often, which was fun.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little about online poker because we've been covering this all year long. You know, the implications of April 15th still impacting the poker community, the poker players. Lots of guys still have money left on Full Tilt Poker and Absolute Poker and Ultimate Bet and wondering when they'll get it back. We've talked about what the DOJ has said, what Full Tilt Poker has said, what Group Bernard Tapie has said about buying up Full Tilt Poker, making a deal with the DOJ, etc. We've gotten a lot of email that we haven't been able to answer in the last couple of weeks, so let's get to some of these. One of them is we reported that in what the Bernard Tapie Group announced, they said that they would, when they bought Full Tilt Poker, they would pay back players in the rest of the world, but American players would have to get the money back from the Department of Justice.
Correct.
And the DOJ hasn't issued a statement on that yet, have they?
They have not, but that is the understanding that the attorney for Full Tilt, or for Bernard Tapie, has stated, is that they will get and assume all debts for poker players outside of the U.S. Those within the U.S., they wash their hands of, basically.
All right. Well, Tim, right here in St. Louis, writes, when the Department of Justice turns over those funds to Full Tilt players, will they also turn over Full Tilt records to the IRS? Will there be tax implications for players?
Actually, this raises a lot of different questions here that have not been answered. Returning the money. I would assume, and believe me, I can get in trouble doing this, but I would assume it'll be dealt the same way that the IRS does everything else. They will assume any money they send you are winnings. You will have to prove that you have any losses. You will have to prove that you've put money on the account or whatever the heck it happens to be. They're going to send it to you, and they're going to assume you have winnings. They're going to make you bear the burden of proof on it. That's one thing. Alrighty, I'm guessing that again, but I think so. So I think there will be tax implications on this thing.
Okay.
Second part of it. Technically, it's still, according to the statements that came out of by the Attorney General up there in New York, this activity was illegal. So you're claiming winnings that, according to their own documentation, are illegal.
Yeah, but I would think that part of the agreement would have to be that we're not going to be able to go after any of these players for doing this, because the argument would be it was Full Tilt in running the website was breaking the law, not the players.
I would hope so, but I have been sitting around tables. People are worried about that, and there are a number of players who have small amounts on Full Tilt saying they'll never claim it. They don't want to take the risk.
I would bet you, if I were a gambling man,
yes,
I would bet you no player will be indicted for just playing poker online.
I totally agree with that. However, it brings up even other things. If you're a player who has liens or levies or back child support or owe taxes or have anything at all, how are those going to be handled?
Yeah.
And I would bet any time you have a large group of people, there's going to be several people who fall in that category.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do there?
I wonder if that guy who played in that Hollywood home game with Tobey Maguire and Gabe Kaplan, if he played online, and now the victims of his Ponzi scheme fraud can go after the money that the DOJ has from all sorts of players online.
This thing, I actually can understand why the DOJ has not made a statement out here, because this has so many implications at so many levels.
Right.
It's not just simply, well, we're just going to hand everybody their money back. Doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Because there could be legitimate claims against these people. I don't know how they're going to handle it. It's going to be very, very tough.
Here's another email. By the way, our email address, DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. Mario writes, what about the phantom funds that Full Tilt never collected? Let me explain that for people who may not be familiar with that. Over the last couple of years, Full Tilt Poker, and to a certain extent some of the other online sites, when it became difficult...
Not Stars.
Not Poker Stars, but when it became difficult for you to get money online, if you went on to Full Tilt's software and told them that you were going to transfer money from your bank account, if you would set that up ahead of time, then Full Tilt would immediately credit your account. Let's say it's $300.
Right.
They would immediately credit your Full Tilt account, and then they would work on getting the payment processed from your bank. In many cases, we think it's tens of thousands of cases, people did not have that money withdrawn from their bank account, and to this day have not had it taken out. They then played with that money and either accrued more or lost it or whatever it was, but those are phantom funds that Full Tilt never had. And that's, you know, millions and millions of dollars there. So, Mario wants to know, can the DOJ or Bernard Tapie's group, can they go back and try to get money from people who deposited on Full Tilt but never had the money withdrawn from their bank account?
Okay, the U.S. is basically the only country in the world where it was a problem putting money on there. The figure that was thrown out, which I've never seen substantiated, is $60 million in phantom funds.
Wow.
I know. I don't know whether that's correct or not. It sounds huge to me. And it's a lot bigger than the initial amount that I was told. But if it is that $60 million, it is basically U.S. players. The Tapie Group will have nothing to do with that. They will not be collecting it because it's U.S. players. They're not paying it out or anything. So I don't think that'll be an issue there.
Okay.
However, $60 million. The DOJ assumes all the assets and everything for Full Tilt. Those are funds owed to Full Tilt. That is money. Now, I'll just pose a question back to you. If the IRS knew that there was $60 million out there in unpaid taxes that was owed to them, do you think they'd ignore it?
No.
Do you think the DOJ, if there's $60 million owed to that fund, that they're going to be able to keep whatever's left?
Well, let me say this. When I said no so quickly when you asked me the IRS question, I would say no if it's we know where $60 million is. But in many of these cases, it's $30 here, $300 there, $150 here, $1,200 there.
Right.
Most of these people weren't making gigantic transfers. You weren't seeing people making a $75,000 deposit.
You're 100%
right. Full Tilt was crediting but never getting out of a bank account. So would the DOJ take the time to go after all these people with these relatively small deposits?
I don't know. Oh, God. Do you know what that brings to mind? And I hope this doesn't develop. You know how you can sub these things out to companies all around the country to try to collect little credit card debts and this and that and
debt
whatever.
Collection agencies.
Debt collection agent. Can you imagine subbing that out? And that's actually an option they could consider.
Yep, they could.
And then, oh, my gosh.
Now, we don't know that it's going to happen.
No. I have no clue, guys.
No.
I have no clue.
This is all speculation because the DOJ hasn't said word one.
That's been the problem. All the information's come out from, like, the attorneys for the Tappy Group, some of the attorneys for Full Tilt, all sorts of statements, documentations concerning them. The DOJ has not said word one.
All right. Another email.
Okay.
Jim writes to say, you said that the Full Tilt shareholders would have to agree to forfeit the assets of the company, even those the Department of Justice seized. Why would they do that in return for nothing?
Well,
and by shareholders, we're not just talking about Ray Bittar, Chris Ferguson, Howard Lederer, Ray First.
No.
You got to assume that Mike Mattisow, Jennifer Harmon, Phil Gordon, John Jawanda, all the people who own very small, maybe less than 1% portions of it, they're considered technically shareholders
they
of the company.
They are shareholders, absolutely.
They own something that's, at least in the software, has some value.
Correct.
The company itself is completely bankrupt and ready to be taken over by GBT, Bernard Tappy Group, BTG.
Okay.
Group Bernard, well, whatever it is.
Yeah.
They're ready to be taken over. But why would these shareholders give up their rights to whatever small bit of assets there are? What are they going to get in return? That's Jim's question.
Actually, on this one, you probably need a legal opinion for it. But just off the top of my head, I would think anyone who had funds on Full Tilt could sue not only the board of directors, but any and all people that received funds during that period of time, which would be shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
That's one possibility. They also have only named the four people right now. There's nothing to say they couldn't continue to name other people.
Mm.
If you're a shareholder, even if you gave a proxy to somebody else to handle your votes and your shares, are you liable? I don't know.
I'm not
an attorney, but I'm guaranteeing that there could be ramifications in there, probably something we haven't even thought of.
Right.
If you could get out without it costing you anything, getting a clean slate, I don't know. It might be worth it.
Put it behind you and have nobody
exactly.
able to come after your money?
And be able to sit at a table and look the other people in the eye?
Yeah.
I don't know. It could be.
Speaking of which, did you hear that Phil Ivey showed up in Macau and played in he played in the PokerStars APPT over there and then ended up in some of those huge cash games going on as well?
Yeah. I think he'd been playing some cash games outside of the U.S. prior to this. I haven't played with him, obviously.
But that was his first big tournament since March.
Correct. Tournament-wise and actually, getting in front of the media-wise, that is his first one that I know of.
And when we talk about big cash games, we're talking about $10,000, $20,000, no limit hold'em. Now, that's Hong Kong dollars, which translates to $1,300, $2,600 U.S.
He's about 7-to-1 trade,
yeah.
Last I saw.
That's still pretty big. And the PLO is 5K, 10K Hong Kong, which is $640, $1,280 U.S. It's much easier to do the math in a PLO game where you got to triple and add the rest of the pot and all that
sort
of stuff. I'm going to repot now. What's
$1,280?
Anyway, there was a huge amount of money over there. And then there was a rumor, while we're on Macau, just as a tangent here, there was a rumor of a guy who wanted to start up what was called the first $100 million tournament. the idea was $25 million would go to the eventual winner. Now, we've heard of high-stakes tournaments that have gone on, $25,000, $50,000, $100,000, $250,000. There were the people in the Bernard Tapie group who wanted to do that one at Wembley Stadium, where it would be a $30 million prize pool.
Right.
This guy wanted to do a $100 million prize pool with $25 million going to the eventual winner. But let's say you're going to get 500 people to play in this tournament. Are they going to put up $200,000 each? How are you going to get to a prize pool of $100 million? Well, I think that's the prize pool of the entire World Series of Poker.
Well, it's not. It's bigger than that when you put all 58 of the events together and everything like that. But do remember, this year at the World Series, they have a special event. They're limiting it to 45 people, $1 million buy-in.
Yep.
Last I heard, they had 22 signups
already.
Well,
that's what we announced on the show a couple of weeks ago.
There you go.
22 people are in there for $1 million each. There's a charity aspect to that.
Correct.
Guy's involved. There's a platinum bracelet that you're playing for.
I know.
Et cetera, et cetera. And the winner of that's going to get $17 million. But, you know, even if they get the 48, that's a $48 million prize pool. This is $100 million.
We will see it in our lifetime. I don't know when.
I don't think it's coming. I'll tell you when we're going to get to a $100 million prize pool. When online poker is legal in the United States, you'll see it in the main event of the World Series of Poker.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. When they can start qualifying within the U.S. and everywhere else, just like they do in 104 other countries.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you will see it.
One more email about Full Tilt from a listener in Belgium by the name of George, who loves the show and listens to us via iTunes. Thank you
for
that, George. We appreciate it. He said, I heard that some of the European players who are going to, quote, be taken care of by the Tapie group could be offered a piece of Full Tilt instead of cash. Would you take a piece of the new Full Tilt poker in exchange for whatever money you have online?
Okay, the first thing you think on that is obviously, well, why would I be interested in that at all? However, you have new management, you have new owners, they're going to come into it hot and heavy just like any time. If it was an attractive piece, in other words, if you're getting a 2-to-1 value for your money or something like that, actually, yeah, I would very seriously consider it.
Really?
Now, obviously, you can't in the U.S., you know, there's all these other things, but if I was living in Belgium and they offered me a piece of it and I thought it was at least a 2-to-1 value, not in potential, but an actual thing, yeah, I would be very interested.
So you think that Tilt has a really good chance of bouncing back, even without the U.S. players?
I do. I have to admit it, I did not a few months ago, but in talking to players around at the tables and the felt and doing some more research in that, I don't think it's permanently damaged. They may have a major shift in the name, you know, formerly known as. They may do all sorts of different things that way. It definitely is going to have to bring in some good PR agencies to help them out. But I think Full Tilt, in a new total situation, will probably survive and will probably prosper if this goes through.
People have asked me if Full Tilt Poker will ever be able to attract poker players again. And I told them the same thing I say to anybody else when it comes to poker. Players go where the games are.
Absolutely.
If you live in a city with multiple casinos, the poker room in that town that does the best is the one that has the best games,
yeah,
the beatable games, the best benefits, the nicest room. You know, that's one of the reasons why this place that we're sitting in right
Absolutely.
Now is thriving.
Absolutely.
There's no smoke in here. It's got windows so that you're walled off from the slot machines. They got all the games you want to play here,
yep,
et cetera. Same thing. Poker players go where the games are. And if those high-stakes guys who used to play on Full Tilt
yep.
can take their money that's still on Full Tilt and start playing again, the Patrick Antoniuses and Tom Dwans of the world,
mm-hmm.
and Phil Galfond wants to join them and they want to play huge 500, 1,000 PLO, and it's on Full Tilt as opposed to Stars
mm-hmm.
or Party Poker, that's where the game's going to be.
Well, and you got Rush Poker. Where was that? That was at Full Tilt.
Right.
When they were playing some of the heads-up the Durer was playing, and they had at times 100,000 people watching them. Well, they weren't just watching the action there. They were probably playing a small game on the side of it, or
right.
at least a good chunk of them were.
Right.
So, yeah, it's got a lot of hurdles. It's got a lot of problems. It doesn't have that clean bill of health like a PokerStars does. But will it be back? You nailed it. if people go there and they like the game and they like the competition and they like the structure, they're probably going to play it.
One last thing about Full Tilt Poker, and then we have to turn to Facebook and poker, which is a whole different thing, but we've got to get to it. Last Tuesday, the website Wicked Chops Poker published a feature story written by F-Train, an online guy by the name of Dave Beer. He wrote a feature story about Ray Bitar. It had interviews with former Full Tilt employees. Ray Bitar was the CEO of Full Tilt Poker, one of the people indicted by the Department of Justice. So Dave talked to former Tilt employees and pros and other people who had done business with Bitar. And you have to be a Wicked Chops insider to read the whole thing, and I haven't. But they did put an excerpt up on their site, and here's one of the things it said. Quote, Ray Bitar was not an especially impressive executive. When Howard Lederer was president of Tiltware, it was hard to tell that Ray was CEO, as most people assumed that Howard was in charge and Ray took his orders from Howard. At the very least, Ray seemed careful not to make any decision, no matter how trivial, without getting Howard's input and buy-in. Part of this is that Howard was far more technically oriented than Ray, and in a company that's primarily a software development company, Howard was able to better understand the technology. That's from a former employee of Full Tilt Poker. If you're Howard Lederer and you want to tell the world, look, this wasn't my fault. I didn't set out to cheat people. If there's former employees saying, hey, Ray didn't really know what was going on, it all had to go through Howard, that's not good if you're Howard.
The only thing is that Howard was trying to step away from it some, was giving some of the control over to other people, I guess, Ray Bitar, I don't know.
And even when we interviewed him a year and a half ago, I introduced him on the show as one of the owners of Full Tilt Poker, and he stopped me and said, I was a founder. I'm not an executive in the company anymore.
Yeah, he did. He absolutely was trying to diverse himself and move away from it some. Also, the decisions for something like a Phantom Fund and everything. Honestly, I just can't see Howard making that decision.
The question is, can you see Ray Bitar making that decision if he wasn't making these decisions?
I know. We just don't know for sure.
No, we don't.
We just don't.
It's
the only thing I know of is it's not a Ponzi scheme. Okay? I guarantee it's not a Ponzi scheme.
No, we agreed on that from day one. You're right. Okay, now let's talk about Facebook, which is part of the online poker equation that has not been discussed. Facebook hosts Zynga Poker,
yes,
which many people may not know is the number one poker site in the world. They have 7 million users a day, 30 million a month. That dwarfs PokerStars and Party Poker and the others. Now, all of the stuff on Zynga is free. So people have been saying, well, aren't they just waiting for it to get legalized in the United States so they can offer real money poker? Poker News talked to Lo Tony, who is the CEO of Zynga Poker, and he said, our business model is free to play. We monetize the virtual goods. Now, these are the same people behind Farmville and Mafia Wars, and they make a lot of money from this. Even though it's free to play, so there's no rake.
Right.
Zynga Poker brings in $85 million last year.
Yeah.
$85 million, that's 18% of the company's revenue. Now, they make a half a billion dollars for other online games like Farmville and Mafia War, but $85 million, and they don't charge any rake. People have to buy chips to play on there. It's all virtual goods that they're selling. But he says, that's our business model. We have no interest in going after the real money space. My question for you, Dennis, is he just saying that, or do you believe him?
To be truthful, I find it very, very difficult to believe. With the dollar amounts that are being tossed around, with the number of, quote, billionaires that are now looking at getting into this and are actually pushing to make it legal in the U.S., I find it hard to believe that the largest database of poker players in the world is not at least interested in finding out if there's a place for them here.
Mm-hmm.
That just doesn't make any sense to me. I would be extremely surprised if they're not teamed up with a major player sometime in the next 12 months.
Well, here's the interesting part of this. I mentioned Facebook, which is Zynga Poker was launched. Zynga's also on iPhone apps and Android apps and that sort of thing. Facebook, according to eGaming Review, is developing plans to offer real money gambling.
There you go.
In the UK, they're going to start in England, as early as next year, you know, a few months from now. They are not going to do it with Zynga necessarily, but they are kind of looking for companies who they could license, 6, 7, 8 different companies they would license in the UK, companies that want to offer their gambling platform on Facebook. Okay, now I have to go back to, we already have existing companies like PokerStars and Party Poker doing that. Could Bernard Tapie, I'm serious about this, could he know about that and be thinking, that's the future of Full Tilt Poker? I'm going to do Full Tilt Poker on Facebook.
The gentleman, nobody's accused him of a lack of intelligence. They may not like his ideas, and he has some things in his background that have not come through really, really well, you know, shaving points and all this other stuff.
Yep.
But I'm telling you what, if that's his idea and if he knows how to get it done, maybe I do want to share a Full Tilt.
That brings us right back to that. Even if it's not Full Tilt Poker.
Well, yeah. I'm kidding, folks. I don't want to share a Full Tilt. Forget that.
If Facebook is going to get into that.
Yes.
Real money gambling.
Yeah. Think on that.
How much of a game changer is it?
Well, how many people are on Facebook now? 500 million? Just take a normal percentage of people to play poker. And take that percentage into the 500 million. You now have the number one site in the world.
Yeah.
Period. You do. Instantly.
Yep.
Talk about a database. Wow.
Tremendous.
Yeah. And I think they have funds to be able to do something.
I think Mark Zuckerberg, you know.
Probably could do something.
By the way, I should point out, we don't think that Facebook is going to get into
online
poker.
Yeah, absolutely not.
But Facebook would be the site you go to get to that online poker.
Yeah.
And however they monetize that, who knows?
All they have to do is say, give us a small percentage of your rake.
Yep.
And we'll allow you to use Facebook.
Right.
Or go on to Facebook.
What a brand. What an international online brand as a portal to online poker.
You ever hear of the word monopoly?
Yeah. Well, not a monopoly, but certainly the 800-pound gorilla in the room.
Okay.
That's what they would be.
Wow. I don't know. Yeah, absolutely.
A couple other things on online poker. Today in Washington, D.C., they're having the second day of the Digital Gaming and Lottery Policy Summit. Digital gaming and lottery, they're all together because the state lotteries are worried.
We're
going to lose money if you do online poker intrastate in Nevada or Iowa or New Jersey or D.C. or here in Missouri and Illinois. According to the surveys that were presented today at the Digital Gaming and Lottery Policy Summit, the amount of money that people allocate for lotto tickets would not change. The people who play the lottery are not the same as the people who play poker online. And if they are, they're not giving up the lottery with the billboards that say, our jackpot's now $123 million for Powerball. They're not going to give that up and take those funds and put them into online poker. That's what the survey says. It also says that public opinion on internet gaming right now is only 58% believe it's legal in some way, 42% believe it's completely illegal, but the majority of people favor federal regulation of online gaming. And that's what we've been talking about all through the 3 years we've been doing this show.
Absolutely.
Federal regulation, not state by state, not intrastate, but federal regulation, making it legal and regulated everywhere so you can play across state lines, across national borders, because that's where the pool of players is.
All you want is a safe environment to go on there and enjoy the game.
Right.
Really, really simple. Washington, you hear that? Never mind. Don't get me started.
All right. Dennis has to run because he's actually in a tournament. I kind of forgot about this because we were having such a great discussion here. But he's running back in to play in the Gateway Poker Classic tournament that started at noon today. Good luck. I hope your
chips—you've
been blinded off in the hour you've been gone.
I probably lost about 20% of my chips.
But you'll still be okay when you get back there.
I think so.
I think I'm going to play in the Six Max event tomorrow and in the main event on Saturday.
Okay, good.
And we'll have updates on all of that next week on the show. Between now and then, remember you can get any of our previous shows. Go to thechipleader.com and click on the Final Table Show blog. We have a list of all of our previous guests on there as well. Until next Tuesday, I'm Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips, live from Harris, St. Louis on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. Have a great week.